This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba talking with you through the rest of the hour about what's new in healthy living, sharing down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. In addition to our calls, Zorba, at 800-462-7413, we have some topics to talk about.
Yes, we're going to talk about early puberty and whether that puts kids at risk for lots of stuff that happens. So if you mature early, what happens to you a year or 2 years later? Are there some risky things that might happen?
My guess is there are, or we wouldn't be talking about it.
And what can we do about them? Then we're going to talk about trans fats. Why are they bad? Where are they bad? How do we see them?
They're the really bad fats.
They're the bad fats.
Bad trans fats. None of them in our recipe.
None of them. Pizzas with spinach, it only has some good stuff in it and no bad fats.
And this one from Elko, Wisconsin listener Vicky Wojak, with whom we will be talking while we talk about the recipe.
Perfecto.
Again, the number if you'd like to talk with Zorba. Do you have a problem? Zorba would be happy to hear from you. 800-462-7413. A problem about your health, I mean. Not trouble at the workplace.
Not the financial problems, the car problems, not problems with a television set, only the health problems. That's all I answer. Nada for everything else.
Let's welcome a listener now, Zorba in Boise, Idaho. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, it's a problem I haven't heard before on your show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if it's a problem, but my son, my 14-year-old son, is a mouth breather.
Mm-hmm.
A doctor called it that probably several years ago when he was having some sort of a dental exam, and I'd never thought of him as a mouth breather before.
So wait a minute. He was having a dental exam by the dentist by the doctor?
It was a dentist, and they're the ones, I believe, he's the one who asked if he is a mouth breather. I hadn't even heard that term before, and it may have been related to something to do with his dental things, and I let it go. I just thought, well, sure he breathes through his mouth, no big deal, but he's 14 now, and he is indeed a mouth breather.
I have a question for you. How do you know he's a mouth breather? I mean, just a question.
He never closes his mouth.
Well, come on. I've never closed him. I'm not a mouth breather. I never close my mouth. I know I'm always talking, but I'm not a mouth breather. I can talk and breathe through my nose and talk and breathe through my nose. But how do you know you're... Maybe I'm a mouth breather and I've never known it. Maybe that's my problem. I'm a mouth breather.
And maybe he isn't. But what I'm seeing... The behavior I'm noticing now at 14, and to my horror, he was invited to eat at a young girl's family's house.
Okay.
And I said, of course, but out of my mouth came, and be sure to chew with your mouth closed, which I've given him that direction now for 14 years. And I see things churning in there constantly, my flashing forward, I see him on his prom date and food just churning around.
I think we all have the image of embarrassment with child eating at a table. And so I have a question for you. You know, kids and adults who breathe through their mouth often have problems with their nose. I mean, that's why they breathe through their mouth.
Yeah.
Now, infants, they cannot breathe through their mouth. They breathe through their nose. And that's why little infants, when their nose is stuffed with mucus, you know, they choke and they can't breathe because they cannot breathe through their mouth until they're about a year, year and a half old. But adults, you know, you breathe through your mouth and what happens is it dries out your mucus membranes. Your dentist may have noticed that because he may or she may have looked at the mucus membranes in the mouth and said, gee, these are dry, drier than usual. Your child's a mouth breather. They may have just looked in the nose. You look in the nose and the nose is often swollen and you can't breathe through there. You brought him to the doctor? You haven't brought him to your regular doctor?
No, not about this. And that's why I'm asking you, is this even really an issue or a problem?
Oh, I think it's an issue, absolutely. I mean, you want to be able to, first of all, your child, if he's a mouth breather and he's not breathing through his nose at all, then he has trouble when he's chewing, you know, like you said. I mean, that may be a totally separate issue, but it may be related to this. And having his nose looked at and making sure that you know, there are medicines we can give, sprays, steroid sprays that can shrink the mucous membranes in the nose so he can breathe through his nose.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't sound congested.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
But you know, it doesn't sound congested, but what happens when he's eating?
Well, he chews with his mouth open. That's really the only symptom. Otherwise, there's nothing else happening in there, and he always has his mouth open. Mm-hmm. He's always breathing through his mouth. It's just a little bit open. I thought it was his braces for a while. Now those are off.
Well, the braces
no
do.
Excuse.
Yeah, the braces can be an issue.
But this is something that medication
absolutely
can help.
I think
okay.
you got. I think you should bring him to your doc. I think you should look towards. There are a number of sprays. There
okay.
is an antihistamine spray called Estelin, Estelin. Great spray. A lot of kids tolerate that. That can shrink the membranes in the nose. Steroid nasal sprays, Flonase, Nasonex, Rhinocort, there are a whole bunch of them.
Okay.
They all do about the same thing. They can shrink the nose. And frankly, sometimes kids actually, and adults, will have surgery to remove polyps. There can be polyps in the nose, and they can cause obstruction. If he's a mouth breather, he ought to have it taken care of.
Okay.
Absolutely is important. Now, I'm not sure if that's the reason that he's chewing with his mouth open. I'm not sure. But I mentioned that because that's an important thing. Culturally, that really is an issue. You know, you're sitting at a formal setting and you're expected to chew with your mouth closed. If you're with your buds and you're having some pizza, you know, and you're at a game or something like that, it's not quite the same thing as sitting at a table. And especially for a teenager, you don't want to go into the realms of embarrassment because that can be a big issue. So have his nose looked at and good luck.
Will do. Thanks so much, Dr. Zerba.
We appreciate the call. I wonder after 14, though, whether even if he got this fixed, if he'd be so acclimated to breathing through his mouth, would you have to go through some behavioral therapy or
something? It's a very natural thing to want to breathe through your nose.
Oh, it is.
Because, you know, when you have a cold and you can't breathe through your nose and you breathe through your mouth, your mucous membranes are dry when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
And I don't like that feeling, and most people don't like that feeling. The first thing people want to do is clear up their nose so that they can breathe through their nose. It really is a much more comfortable thing. So, yeah, maybe you need a little training, but I doubt it. Naturally more comfortable to breathe through your
Speaking
nose.
Speaking of kids, you mentioned a topic on puberty and early puberty.
Yeah, there's some very disturbing information. We know that, I'm sure we all remember, there were kids in our class who went through puberty early. I remember in my elementary school class back in the dark ages, I remember Arnold Lewis. And I still can remember Arnold Lewis went through puberty like in sixth grade, so he was the tallest kid in the class, and he was shaving, and he was so tall. And then I went to my 20th year reunion, and I looked at him, I said, Arnold, what happened? You shrunk. Well, in fact, Arnold had gone to 5'9 when we were all like 5 feet, and he was never that tall. And everyone at the class thought of him as tall, but in fact, he was never a tall person.
And you just stopped growing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And Arnold, I remember this, is a perfect example like this. Started to hang around with older kids who were 16 or 17. And what this study showed is, especially in boys, when they go through puberty early, it opens up their door to lots of other experiences, lots of experiences. Often, if they associate with older boys, now these are boys associating with boys, they're much more likely to have problems, physical fights, knives or guns pulled on them. They're more likely to be victimized because here it is, they look like they're 16 and they're only maybe 13 or 14. Interestingly, if the boys hang around with girls, they're okay. That girls tend to produce a more stabilizing behavior on boy behavior. And this, of course,
I would think that there would be problems there, too, though.
Well, there might be other problems.
If a boy reaches puberty before his mind is ready and he's hanging out with a girl, then...
You bet. You're assuming, of course, the sex thing.
Yeah.
And that there may be sexuality that's involved. Well, the study actually wasn't looking at that in specific. That, of course, may be the issue.
But the girl had a kind of calming, can have a calming...
Well, and also, there's some boys who go through puberty and they date. They don't necessarily have sex. They may date, they may kiss, but they may, you know, I think we're making a leap of assumption, which is logical, but doesn't occur in all these cases. We know that that young adolescent men who are of age 16, 17, 18, 19, you know, of obviously, you know, legal age at 18, but we know that when they go out with girls, they don't suffer from that disease that I call testosterone dementia, where the male hormone testosterone surges through the body and causes guys to do wild and crazy things, and girls kind of hold that
in. I would think that there would be some problems the other way, too, though, Zorba. Kids who don't reach puberty as early as their peers, I would think, would tend to get picked on and treated like littler kids than they really are, and that would be a problem, too.
Absolutely. But this... maybe a problem where they're picked on and they're bullied on, but it turns out that it's the kids who look older who are more likely to get themselves into these aggressive situations, especially boy to boy. Girl to girl doesn't appear to be the same situation, but other studies have shown that girls who go through puberty earlier, where their brain is not at that age, often have trouble with early sexuality, and that's a completely different
thing. It says here, it seems a lot like marriage. Females are really good for women. Women seem to help curtail men's bad experiences. Do you find that to be true?
Of course.
I mean, I think that's a little sexist in a reverse.
There's no doubt about it. Women are better for men. Absolutely. We add spice to their life, and they bring us back into it.
Men are bad, and women are good.
Men are bad. Women are good. Done. Next. Next.
I have to do my job. 800-462-7413.
Wow, you are spectacular at that job. Do it again.
800-462-7413. I did that from
memory.
I didn't even have to look.
It's a harmonic. It's lyrical.
A listener joins in now from St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, what's up?
I had a question for you. It's kind of a question that I think affects a lot of Americans, and it has to do with caffeine intake.
Uh-huh.
In a given day, for me at least, wake up in the morning, I have anywhere from 1 to 2 cups of coffee in the morning.
Okay.
I usually have one in the afternoon after lunch, just because I was told that supposedly a coffee after lunch helps with the digestive system afterwards, and it kind of gives you that afternoon boost when you actually normally have lunch. You always have that one for an afternoon nap.
Oh yeah. That's what I do after lunch. I have my lunch. I immediately go to sleep for an hour.
Exactly.
That's what I do. I'm an hour late to see my patients. Sleep for an hour.
And then afterwards, after I'm done with lunch, I usually work until like 6, and then I go study for an exam for about 3 hours. So then I have 1 or 2 cups of coffee for there to stay up.
Yeah,
stimulating the focus. Then I guess my question is, it seems that during a weekend, if I'd be waking up, that if I don't have some kind of caffeine source, whether it be a soda or a coffee or a double espresso.
That's right, or a Red Bull. Let's talk about those drinks like Red Bull. They're filled with caffeine.
But I'm more of a coffee drinker myself, that I have this headache. I'm supposing it's a caffeine withdrawal headache, but I would like to get to a point where I don't have those anymore, and I'm trying to find out that, for me, I need a boost in the morning and a couple times during the day, but at what level is healthy to where I won't get these headaches?
Caffeine withdrawal headaches. Big issue because, like you say, what you've noticed is during the week, here it is, you're having 80 to 120 milligrams, maybe 160 milligrams in the morning. You've got your lunch. You put yourself at another 160 milligrams perhaps after lunch, or 80 milligrams. It's a drug. It's measured in milligrams. That caffeine from the morning is out of your system, and in the evening you do the same. By the way, that is not an unusual thing. It's something that I tend to do. I don't know if I drink quite that much when I drink it, but I do it. I don't get caffeine withdrawal headaches because I drink caffeine on the weekend, so it doesn't make any difference at all. But you're drinking too much caffeine if you're getting caffeine withdrawal headaches, and the treatment for that is less caffeine during the week. And what will happen is your body will adjust to a lower dose, and you will probably not have these caffeine
withdrawal
headaches.
But if it's a withdrawal, then if he drank more caffeine all the time, it wouldn't ever get the caffeine withdrawal headache.
Well, there are a couple options. Tom is exactly right. You can just drink the same amount of caffeine on the weekend. You won't get the withdrawal headaches. Now, do you want to do that, or you don't want to do that?
Well, quite honestly, I'd like to have a certain kind of energy boost in the morning because I've never been a morning person, period. But at the same time, there become times in the day where it feels like I think I'm just not fully hydrated at all because of it being a diuretic and just completely dehydrating myself.
Yeah, it's not much of a diuretic. Coffee is not that much of a diuretic. It's a very mild diuretic. If hydration is the issue, you drink some water or drink some other juices. I think your issue is caffeine. And frankly, the real issue is you're not as interested in as much caffeine on the weekend. My recommendation is simply take the number of times you're drinking coffee, make them kind of exactly the same, but drink less of it. So in the morning when you get up, instead of having like 2 cups of coffee, have 1 cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. At lunch, you have 1 cup of coffee. At dinner, maybe have a small cup of coffee. And simply reduce your intake by 50%, and that may make a big difference.
Yeah.
And not give you the caffeine withdrawal headaches on the weekend when when life is different and you're not drinking as much coffee.
Yeah, you really are a coffee drinker. He gave his problem. You said, that's a very important thing. Anyway, anything with coffee is a very important topic.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, I'm a coffee drinker. That's it. Yeah. But I wake up. But I have exactly the same thing. I wake up in the morning. I'll have a little dark roast coffee in the morning. Then I have like one or two cups in the morning. Then right after lunch, I sit down with my bologna sandwich. You know,
and you do not. You haven't had a bologna sandwich in 40 years
on white bread. I have it once a year, and I think of Aunt Myrtle because she made me bologna sandwich. That's about it.
Right.
But whatever lunch I have, I will often have a cup. But I found that I was having coffee throughout the morning and throughout the afternoon, and that was giving me a headache. So what I did was change it completely a few years ago. I have it in the morning, have it after lunch, and then if I'm going to go out and do some things where I have to think in the evening, I will have a small cup in the evening. I reduced my caffeine intake by 50%. I felt good, but I still drink it throughout the day. Yeah. His problem is he's caffeinated. Yep. And if he's caffeinated, he could do a public radio show, and then he'd be a competition. That would be the problem. Drop the competition. That's the way
you'd have to go to medical school first. But
yeah, well, that's a
slight problem. Thank you. Appreciate the call from St. Louis. And speaking of St. Louis, a quick email here, Zorba. Not too long ago, we had a young woman on the show, you'll remember, that said her boyfriend's face got red when he would drink Budweiser.
That's right.
They were from St. Louis, too, ironically. Mm-hmm. We joked then that they should just move to Wisconsin drink Miller. His troubles would be over.
That's right.
Scott from Bloomington, Indiana writes to tell us we may have been onto something with that advice. He writes, if the boyfriend can drink other beers, but just not Budweiser, it may be explained by the fact that Budweiser is brewed with rice.
Rice.
I didn't know that.
Neither did I. Neither did I. We need a beer meister.
Scott from Bloomington says so. Unlike most domestic beers, so he may have an allergy to rice.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that at all. Yeah. I didn't know. You know what this means, Tom? This means that some beers may be brewed with other grains besides rice, right?
Well, I'm sure.
Such as what?
Well, what are they brewed with usually?
I don't know. Barley, hops, but I
there are there's hops.
But
in
I bet you some of our listeners know. What
I,
some of
I
these
know
beers
almost
are.
Nothing about beer. Wheat? Are they,
I know nothing about beer. And I live in the state of Wisconsin, where beer next to milk is the state drink.
Anyway,
so I don't.
It could
know
be
what
a rice allergy.
Oh, that's very interesting. Could be a rice. It's not a St. Louis allergy.
Well, it could
be a rice allergy. Could be an allergy to St. Louis. Could be an allergy to rice. Only time will tell. Tune in, folks.
Right. And give us a call at 800-462-7413. A listener now in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, Zorba. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
I'm calling because I'm having a little bit of tenderness in my forearms and wrists.
Mm-hmm. From what? What do you think it's from?
Possibly carpal tunnel. Oh. I'm not sure if it's carpal tunnel or tendonitis. I haven't had a test done on it. I had a friend who had a test for carpal tunnel. Done. I had made an appointment, and they stick a bunch of needles in your arm.
That's right. They stick. That's right. They do. Not only do they stick these needles, they're small little needles, but they electrify the needles so that your fingers do jumpy things. And some people hate them. I had it done, and it didn't bother me. But some people just don't like it. Well, the concept of needles, they don't like.
Was it positive? Did they say you had carpal?
No, she didn't have the test done.
Well, she hasn't had.
Her friend had the test.
Oh. I was listening to another show from here.
Tom's on the other line with your friend. No, not really. But getting back to this, so you've got pain in the wrist. What do you do for a living? Are you on the computer all the time? Do you work in a factory at all?
I'm a dental hygienist, so I do a lot of the repetitive motion.
Okay, and that does put you at risk for carpal tunnel syndrome. Wake you up at night? Do you feel like your hand is falling asleep?
No, I feel a little bit of pain in my forearm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's in the forearm. It's not really a wrist-type pain. It's more of a forearm pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this may not be carpal tunnel. Carpal tunnel syndrome, usually you've got some numbness in finger number 5, 4, and 3. You know, the last three fingers, the ring finger, the baby finger, and the middle finger. That's usually where you end up having symptoms for carpal tunnel. Usually the hand is falling asleep. It usually is after, repetitive work. Like you said, or work on the computer where you're putting some pressure on the wrist. Quite often, there'll be some pain in the wrist or the bottom of the hand. Forearm pain is usually a little bit different. A question for you. Are you working full-time, part-time? How many hours a week do you work?
You know, a couple of years ago I was working full-time, but then I cut down to part-time.
Mm-hmm. When you're working full-time, was it worse?
Yeah.
I think this may be related to the work you're doing. I mean, that's what it seems like. I've got a couple of great suggestions. Mm-hmm. A tennis elbow splint. You can go to the sporting goods store and get it, and what you do is you put the splint on. It puts pressure on the muscles, the forearm muscles, in the elbow. You do it below the elbow, in the middle of the forearm. Sometimes that can make a big, big difference. Just that change. The other thing is, call your doc, get an appointment with a physical therapist. Often you need a referral, and they will give you some exercises that you do with these big rubber bands. They're not really rubber bands, but they're made of a springy material. And what they do is you have to build up your forearms. And if you build up your forearms so they're more like Popeye's, the sailor man, you'll actually have less pain. Now, I don't want you to look like Popeye because you're a woman, you're not a guy. But seriously, you build up those forearm muscles, and that often will take away the pain at the wrist. You may have to get to the other side where you're doing this work in the person's mouth, and you've got to build up those muscles. If you don't want to go to a physical therapist, if you know somebody who is a gymnast, does a lot of exercise, if you belong to a health club, free weights will also do the same thing. Build up those forearm muscles, get a tennis elbow splint, and if that doesn't work, give us a call back.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for the call. Speaking of Popeye, yeah. If he's listening, yeah, we have a spinach recipe.
Oh, wow! So. Oh, wow! Pizza with spinach. I never thought of that. Popeye.
And more of your calls, too. Great to have you with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number if you have a question for Zorba. But before we get back to the phones, it is recipe time. Zorba, this one from Elko, Wisconsin listener Vicki Woyak, who just happens to be on the phone with us now. Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
How you doing?
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, well, this is for pita pizzas with spinach. How'd you come across this one?
I ran across the original recipe in a magazine, but then because I'm on the DASH diet.
The DASH diet. What do you do on the DASH diet?
DASH is Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension.
Ah, very good. Now, no one, I would venture to say that less than 0.5% of the
population. Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension.
Right. In other words, it's sort of a low-salt diet. However, it's a diet that's rich in dairy products. And it's called the DASH diet. It's a great diet. And they've been looking at it for years. And that's where we found that low-fat dairy products appear to be associated with a reduced risk of heart attack and stroke. Fascinating. Because that's how dairy came back into the picture on the new food pyramid. The new food pyramid has more dairy in it because of the DASH diet research.
Yeah. So you
I've got a question for her. Wait a minute. Time out. Where'd you get the DASH diet? I mean, you know, this is more of a, it's more of a research diet. Are you a researcher? I mean, I have never had a caller say to me, I'm on the DASH diet.
Oh, really? Well, I found it on the American Heart Association website, of
course. Wow.
But I had heard about it because I was recently diagnosed with hypertension.
Uh-huh. I'm impressed. I'm serious. I am very impressed. And you know what? This brings up a really important point about the web, the fact that that people go to the web for health information, and knowing what the website is important, and the fact that you went to the American Heart Association website is a great website. So I just want to congratulate you on going onto a diet like that and looking at it. So congrats.
Pita pizzas with spinach.
Yes.
Okay, hang on. We're going to go through it,
and I'm going to come back and forth ask you a few questions. We start out with 4 pita breads, whole wheat.
Okay, 4 pita breads.
Right, whole wheat.
This serves 4, then? Individual pitas?
That's right, unless you're going to share it with somebody else, in which case it would serve 8.
Oh.
You'd have half a pita, which wouldn't be very much.
No, not enough food.
No, I think it should serve 4. Now, Notice it's whole wheat pita bread. So whole grains are always better than refined carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. We eat too many refined carbohydrates. The theory why we've got an increase in diabetes in our society is we eat refined carbohydrates. So you wouldn't want to use white pita bread. You always want to put in whole grains wherever possible. Great thing. Okay.
What next?
1 cup of low-fat ricotta cheese.
A cup of low-fat ricotta cheese.
Another point. Low-fat ricotta cheese is great. The taste is in there. Low-fat is really just as good as full-fat. Full-fat is going to give you more calories, which you don't need, more fat, which you don't need, so low fat is great.
Mm-hmm. And?
Half teaspoon of garlic powder.
Half a little tea garlic powder.
Okay, now, where do you get your garlic powder, Vicki?
Okay, well, that was a little bit of a mistake when I sent the recipe in. I don't use powder. Uh-huh. I had adjusted it for a friend of mine.
Yeah, so what do you use?
My own garlic.
That's right.
My own.
Absolutely the right way to do it. That was what I was going to put in. I was saying, why have a half teaspoon of garlic powder? Why not get garlic at the grocery store? You know, put it through a garlic press and use it. It's going to taste much better.
But she says she has her own. You don't get it? You grow your own?
Mm-hmm. I grow my own.
That's
up
great.
Here in the north.
Yeah,
in Elko, do they have a growing season long enough to grow anything?
Yeah, do they have
garlic,
sun?
Yes.
Do they have
we
sun
put it in
Elko?
In the fall.
They what? I'm sorry.
We plant it in the fall.
You plant it in the fall.
The hardneck varieties. I grow a German variety called German porcelain.
Wow. When do you harvest it?
Around August.
Around August. So you plant it in the fall
and
you harvest it around August.
All winter long
which is really neat. I think that's even better. I mean, growing your own fruits and veggies, I think, is a wonderful thing. So I would get rid of the garlic powder, half teaspoon of garlic powder. If you don't want to go through the bother of even buying garlic, there's no bother there. I would use fresh garlic. That's how I would improve
it.
Okay.
What else?
So one package of frozen spinach, chopped, thawed, and squeezed dry.
A package of frozen... Easy for me. Frozen spinach, chopped, thawed, and squeezed dry.
But in the summer, I use fresh.
Right, and that's good. And by the way, I use frozen spinach in lots of stuff.
I like chopped. I like the frozen chopped.
It's cheap, it's inexpensive, it's easy to get to, and the most important thing is squeezing it dry because it's filled with lots of water.
Yeah. Okay,
which is what I do. Okay, 3 medium tomatoes sliced.
3 medium tomatoes sliced.
Mm-hmm. In the wintertime.
Do you grow your own tomatoes?
Yes, I do.
Of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, of course.
So in the wintertime, do you use fresh tomatoes that really don't taste very good, or do you go for the canned variety?
Sometimes I'll substitute for the sauce, which I can myself.
Yeah. Which is great. And sometimes I will go and get some canned tomatoes. And, you know, it depends on what the season is. Okay, 3/4 cup of crumpled feta cheese.
3/4 cup crumpled feta cheese. Do you make your own feta cheese, Vicki?
Make your own feta cheese.
No,
I love it. I love it. You've got to have those goats in there. And 3/4 teaspoon of dried basil. I assume you use fresh basil when it's available, right?
I usually have some in the freezer.
In the freezer. Now, do you blanch it before you put it in the freezer?
My herbs, no.
Mm-hmm. So you just put it in the freezer. So you grow the basil.
I just put it in the freezer.
Put it in the
freezer. I dehydrate some, and then I put some in.
So you dehydrate it. You mean you go and you dehydrate it in a little dehydrator, or you do it in the
sun? I have a very large dehydrator.
You have a large dehydrator. Got it. But now, when you take fresh basil in the freezer, you take it out. I actually have never done that. This makes a lot of sense.
Oh, it works just fine.
Yeah, because basil is very expensive. You buy in the grocery store, it adds another buck or $2 to the recipe. You know, you get a little teeny package in the fresh herb part. I love the fact that I can now get it, but I only pop for the money when I've got company coming.
This is much too much information about the ingredients.
All right, all right, all right. I'm with you. Really easy to make. We talked a lot about preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Place the pita breads on a baking sheet. Combine the ricotta cheese, the garlic, spread it evenly over the pizza. Top with the spinach, the tomatoes, the feta cheese, and a little fresh basil if you've got it, or frozen basil if you don't, or dried basil, you know, which is the least common denominator. Bake it for 12 to 15 minutes until the pita bread is slightly browned, and voila. You've got a wonderful recipe. And by the way, it serves 4, but you could easily divide this up into 6 and 8 and make it an appetizer. And in fact, I am going to make this as an appetizer the next time we have company over at the house, and I'll let you know what
now,
I think about it.
Now we get to go to my most interest. I'm most interested about
which
this
is
call.
What?
Elko, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I used to summer, Vicki, at Lake Enterprise.
Uh-huh.
My dad had a all-year home on Lake Enterprise. I used to go up there every summer. I love Elko. Is the general store still there?
Yes, it is.
How long have you been there?
Well, we've been here permanently for about 11 years.
Oh, you don't remember then the Palmers who used to run the general store. Is the clubhouse still there?
It's taken several transitions, but it's still there.
Uh-huh. Does it still have a bar on one side and a dance place on the other side?
No, the other side is now a restaurant.
Oh, God, they took away the polka in Elko, Wisconsin. They must be going through withdrawal.
Well, anyway.
Thank you.
Nice to hear from somebody in Elko, and the recipe really sounds good to me.
The recipe is yummy. I'm going to make the. I think it's great as an appetizer, too. I'm going to try this.
Yeah. Now, is this heart healthy?
Of course
I mean, pizza heart healthy. They don't
No. First of all, low-fat ricotta cheese is good. It's part of the DASH diet. Yep. It's good because it reduces heart attack, stroke, and hypertension. Tension subsequently, which is good. Crumpled feta. Feta tends to be kind of a medium fat cheese, but it's 3/4 cup divided by 4 people. That's not a lot of feta. When we look at it, it's 7.56 grams of fat, which is practically nothing. 350 calories. If you eat a whole one, a half one is 150 calories. Mm-hmm. This is really good. It's got some dietary fiber because 27% of the dietary fiber you need for the day comes from a pita bread, which is whole wheat. If you made that into a white pita bread, that would give you half or a third of the dietary fiber, so it wouldn't be good. No, this is a heart-healthy recipe.
Vicki, thanks again.
I give this an A.
Appreciate your sending in the recipe, and for sending it in to us, you will be receiving in the mail a copy of our cookbook, Low-Fat, Heart-Healthy, Guilt-Free, Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. Did I get that right?
That's right. You got
Too long a title.
You got it right.
Zorba's Cookbook.
You got it right.
And if you'd like a copy of this recipe, just mail us your request. Send it to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53706. Be sure to enclose a business-sized self-addressed stamped envelope.
Or you can download it at our website at zorbapastor.org, and you can download that recipe, other recipes, and find some other fun stuff to look at.
Is our toll-free number. We're happy to have your call. Zorba's pleased to answer your questions, and my guess he will be able to answer your question about your health if you give us a call. A listener with us now, Zorba, in West Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I just want to say I love your show,
and
I love tofu. I have to fall in the tofu camp here.
You love what?
Tofu. I love tofu. My daughters love tofu.
Who's our next caller?
That's right.
Go ahead. We'll answer.
It's a tofu lover. It's an equal opportunity show.
Oh, yeah.
Tofu and the non-tofu.
Okay.
And this is a tofu lover. About 10 years ago, I donated blood for the National Bone Marrow Program.
They took your blood even though it had that tofu in there. They didn't reject you.
Tried to, but no. And I donated it through the Rhode Island Blood Center.
Yeah.
And about a month ago, I got a letter that said I was a potential match for someone.
Oh, okay. So let me get this straight. So you donated blood because you said you would be a bone marrow donor for somebody who needed bone marrow.
Right.
Who was having a
That's
bone
a
marrow
really replacement. Nice thing for somebody
very nice,
to do.
Very, very nice thing.
Yeah.
Very nice thing.
And I did it 10 years ago, and you know, pretty much had forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did it 10 years ago. You'd forgotten about it, and then you got a call.
Let me guess.
Letter,
you're wondering, do I want to do this?
Sure. Uh-huh.
So they just keep your address, and they
sure.
just find you,
sure.
and I'm no longer in Rhode Island. I'm in Indiana. They found me, tracked me down, and they said I was a potential match for someone, a man with blood cancer.
Right, right, right. Because the marrow, what happens is the whoever it is, man or woman, their marrow is destroyed through a whole variety of things, chemo and radiation and stuff. They destroy the marrow, and then bone marrow stem cells are basically placed in so that it begins to inhabit the bone marrow, and hopefully it then takes, is what it boils down to. Uh-huh.
So my question is, I then donated more blood, two more vials, and it was sent off to a lab.
To double check again.
Right. And it's
right.
2 months. They're not going to get back to me for 2 months. And I'm wondering, what are they looking for, and what is the likelihood of being chosen?
Well, first of all, I can't give you an exact answer, but I can give you an approximate answer to that. They're looking at a few things. First of all, do you have a genetic makeup of your blood, bone marrow, stem cells that are similar to this gentleman's, you know, who he has problems? Is there similarity there? That's number one. Then number two is, do you have have antibodies in there that he can't tolerate. In other words, you may have antibodies from your curriculum vitae of essentially what you've done in your life to produce antibodies. They check you to make sure you don't have hepatitis A and hepatitis B and hep C and all this other stuff.
Right.
But they're also looking to see if you have antibodies that may begin to destroy parts of his body. For instance, do you have a sprue? Tropical sprue is antibodies that work on the intestine. And so they may be searching for that. Do you have certain autoimmune diseases? So they're looking through other things to see whether or not, and when they give him your biological product, is this then going to destroy other parts of his body because you've developed antibodies to it? That's what they're searching for.
This is really what they're looking for. As I mentioned, a nice thing. I thought you were going to call with some reservations now 10 years later. Is there any risk to the donor in this process?
No, I don't think so. What they do is they take out some cells and you're out of there, basically. The risk is pain. It's a painful procedure because they go into the bone and they take out some of the cells. But, you get over the pain, get over the pain is what you do. If your heart is in the right place, it's not a terribly painful procedure. It hurts for a while because you have to puncture the bone to get out the marrow. And it's like, it's not exactly like a broken bone, but you recover completely from it. So I have to ask you a question. This is a really unusual thing. How'd you get into this?
Yeah.
Well, I worked down the street from the Rhode Island Blood Center.
Okay.
And I was going for my gallon mug. Mm-hmm. They had a gallon mug that you got. Uh-huh. And at one point, they had a sign up, so I thought it was cool.
You signed up. Uh-huh. So how do you feel about it? What if you're chosen? I would be really excited. Yeah, it's a really neat thing that you can take your body and grow something that's just a natural part of your body and help someone else who may need that. And it's really kind of neat. So that's what they're looking for. They're looking to make sure that you don't have other bad things in your body that are not bad for you, but could be bad for the person.
I see.
They look for all these compatibility issues that come with a match.
So because you can't say, I have a 1 in 10 chance, I have a 1 in 2
I have no idea what your chances are. No, I have no idea. I know that if it's a blood relative, the chances are really high because you've got lots of compatibility with other things. But I those are only some of the things they're looking for. Frankly, there are other things they're looking for, too, that are called histocompatibility loci, and they have to do with other matches that you have to have. Otherwise, what will happen is it won't take. Basically, is what it boils down to. They also have to make sure that he doesn't have antibodies to you. In other words, he is not likely, but does he have other antibodies to your marrow where he'll destroy the marrow from other things that are resident in other parts of his body that are not resident within the bone marrow? So, and then he probably has to take drugs for the rest of his life, which will make sure that he doesn't destroy the marrow and the marrow doesn't destroy him. It's a complicated thing, but the body fights disease through antibodies and other forms in the immunological system, and there's got to be a match in that system where they're not fighting each other, basically.
Right.
So, good luck to you. Your heart's in the right place.
Well,
kudos.
Thank you.
I really, what you're doing and thinking of doing is really a fine thing, and more people should take heed of what you're doing.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
800-462-7413.
What a wonderful thing. What a wonderful heart this
Isn't that nice?
You bet.
800-462-7413. And a listener in St. Louis, Missouri joins in now. Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling. How can we help?
Basically, my girlfriend and I had a bet in regards to exercising and your body's daily routine and getting habitualized to it. In regards to, walking.
Uh-huh. Now, when you mean your body's routine, you mean doing it on a regular basis, it habituates your body? What do you mean by that?
Like, I'm a chef, and I work between 50 and 60 hours a week.
Yeah, you chefs work long hours, absolutely.
But 99% of it's on my feet, walking.
Mm-hmm. And what was the bet?
She had heard that, your body kind of gets habitualized to the walking, and it doesn't actually count as exercise.
No, it really does count as exercise. She's wrong. It really does count as exercise. One of the issues that we have in our society is we sit down and look at the computer screen, and we don't walk. And if you want to know how much you're walking, have you ever had a pedometer put on a pedometer or bought one?
I actually got one with some sole inserts. And I wore it for a day.
Yeah. Did you measure the number of steps that you took?
No, I didn't.
That's the way to do it. I I'll tell you something. It really shows you. The goal is 10,000 steps a day. 10,000 steps a day translates roughly into 5 miles a day. I'd put it on to see how much you're really walking. You know, as a chef, you will probably be shocked how much you're walking. I'm sure you're walking more than 10,000 steps a day, and you might be walking 15 or 20,000. And the answer is no, the body does not become habituated to exercise. The body wants exercise, just like the body wants good food, wholesome food, well-balanced food. The body really wants exercise to keep it running optimally. And the fact is, we don't get exercise throughout our jobs because we're not a manual labor society. Now, do you like your job?
Right.
That makes a difference. And I'll tell you why. There's some good data that show that, especially men who engage in physical exercise and don't like their job, bricklayers, people who work in factories, who do the grunt work, who don't like their job, that exercise may not be good for them because it doesn't reduce what we call inflammatory molecules in the body. There's very interesting molecules called cytokines that seem to be under mental and physical control. If you like your job and you're doing exercise with your job, you're getting something out of it. And believe me, it's the same as somebody who exercises and does whitewater rafting down in the outdoors. A chef who's working with food who likes his job is doing this physical labor that can be really good for you. And your body does not become used to it, and it does not become habituated.
So you won the bet. How much was the bet?
Yeah, you won the bet. What do you get?
Well, if I won, she was going to lift the restraining order. I'm kidding.
That's a good one. You got us.
I gotta tell you, you got us.
Yes,
Tom's eyes went open. My eyes went open. We were there with you. You got us. Way to go! Way to go!
No, really, what was the bet?
Just household chores.
Household chores.
No, I love it.
Now, this is your girlfriend. Did you say your wife?
Girlfriend.
Do you want her to be your wife sometime?
Maybe at some point, but we have a ways before we're even going to think about that.
Got you.
Well, if you like her a lot, you may not want to rub it in that you won the bet, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, Tom's giving you some advice on a lifelong marriage. There we go. And good luck on that restraining order.
Thanks for the call.
Boy, did he get us. We were right there, our eyes are wide open. We're going, boy.
Looking at each other.
Boy, did we fall into that. What do we have here? And then, boy, bingo.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Great to have you along here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number, if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But, Zorba, before we take our next call, we're going to talk about some really bad fats.
That's right. Bad fats. Trans fats. And, I mean, they're good fats and bad fats. And frankly, I didn't think much when the information on trans fats first came out a number of years ago. But I thought about tropical oils. Remember, coconut oil, palm oil,
right.
Palm kernel oil.
Bad oils.
And they were bad oils because they were, it turns out, because, among other things, they contained fat that increased cholesterol in the bloodstream and so on. Well, trans fats are fats that are manufactured basically. There's some trans fats that are in beef and chicken and pork and so on, but they're the vast minority. Trans fats were thought to be great fats because they are liquid oils that are put through a process called hydrogenation.
Right.
And they make creamier foods taste creamier. They make crunchier foods taste crunchier. And they were used everywhere. They were used in cakes and cookies and french fries and popcorn and margarine and shortening
sure,
and crackers
sure, sure,
and donuts
sure.
and
they were
and
used because we thought they were not bad.
We thought they were fine. We thought that basically
we
got rid of
dumb.
Animal products.
We were dumb.
Now, the nice thing about science is there's no vote. And the fact is people get frustrated and they'll say, wait a minute, doctors don't really know what they're doing. One day they say the fat is good. The next day they say it's bad. But the fact is this is an ongoing process whereby we discover what's good and what's bad. And what turns out is hydrogenation of vegetable oils to make trans fats is not good.
But we know this. Why are we talking about this now? This is old news.
Well, because trans fats are now going to be taken taken out of the American diet because the food industry is now in a great big rush to try to get rid of trans fats. And this is going to change the way some of the foods we eat taste.
Like?
In other words, well, like crackers. There are a lot of crackers that are in grocery stores. And until they figure out how to make the cracker using a different fat, the taste may not be the same.
And like what else? Because I don't
Well, there are crackers and cookies and bacon. Basically,
cookies.
Cookies, right? Cookies. Oh, my God. What
now
am I going to do for
my
cookies?
Yeah.
And immediately.
But we have other kind of fats that we can substitute for.
Well, but it's not that easy to manufacture because trans fats had a very, very long shelf life. So the issue is this. The USDA and the FDA have said we should have as little trans fats as we can possibly get. What does this mean? You're going to start to get it on labels. And they've demanded now, it says, the amount of trans fats on the label. So my suggestion is when you go to the grocery store, you're going to see trans fats on the label. The least trans fats are the foods you should buy.
The least. Well, how much is too much?
Well, we don't know, so the answer is zero. Bring it down as close to zero as you can. That's the answer. And so when you're buying prepackaged goods, no trans fats. When you're buying margarine, no trans fats and so on. And that's the issue. As long as we can read about trans fats on the label, we can get rid of them in our diet and make our diet better.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I've had a problem for as long as I can remember, really in teenage years, now 25. I urinate very, very frequently, more than most people I know.
Uh-huh.
For instance, I went to the movies yesterday, and I used the restroom immediately before the film started, and then during, you know, the two-hour movie, I went twice.
Oh, you went twice. That's a lot.
I go again either right after the movie ends or as soon as I get home, I have to go again.
Uh-huh. Now, do you drink a lot of water, by the way?
I drink a fair amount. Yeah, I do exercise, so I do drink water. I drink tea, no coffee or soda, and I drink very little alcohol, too. Uh-huh. But
you're not drinking like a gallon of water a day.
No, not at all.
That's what I mean. Uh-huh. How about when you go to sleep at night? How often do you get up?
I go to the bathroom right before I go to bed, and then probably once or maybe two times before I fall asleep, and I get up once or twice in the early morning.
Okay, so you get up quite often. Well, there are a few things that may be present here. First of all, have you ever seen a doctor for this? Have you ever had this evaluated at all?
I have. I have. Mm-hmm. I saw a doctor 3 years ago. I've got a very good GP in Racine, and he tested me for diabetes, and that was negative. And he seemed to think that I just have a bladder that alerts my brain more often.
Well, you do. But you may have, I mean, it's called overactive bladder. You know, how old are you right now?
25.
Okay, so you don't have an enlarged prostate. A prostate, you know, at 25 would be very, very unusual to have an enlarged prostate at your age, which is more often guys with enlarged prostates get up once during the night twice during the night.
That's what causes older people to have this problem.
Older men.
Older men, not people.
The women, they don't got the prostate.
Right.
It's only the men that have it.
Right.
That's right. It's not the women that have it.
Right.
But the issue is this. The issue is that you may have an overactive bladder, and there are medications that you can take for overactive bladder. There's an old-fashioned drug called Ditropan, D-I-T-R-O-P-A-N, which now comes in a once-a-day dosage, a drug called Detrol LA, D-E-T-R-O-L LA, which is on the market. These are drugs that are advertised. You know, a lot of women have the problem, and a lot of men actually have the problem. About one quarter of the people who suffer from this are men. I would try one of those drugs and see if that works. And the
I've seen commercials for drugs on television, and they list a lot of side effects like dry mouth or...
They do.
They sound kind
they
of
do.
Bad.
They do. They are bad, but only about 20% of the people get it. 80% of the people don't, especially at the lower dose. The lower dose is probably about 85% of the people tolerate it. I would try it to see if it works. The reason is you'd like to know if the result is from an overactive bladder. That would be one way to go. Say, you know, just a drug trial and say if it works. And the reason is not to take it every day, but you may say, gee, I'm going to be going on a car trip and I don't want to keep on stopping all the time. I'll just take this. In other words, that's a way of looking at it. Not as a daily drug, but as a daily drug when you need it. The other issue is whether or not you ought to go to a urologist and have yourself scoped. You know, look at the bladder, look at the bladder size. Some people actually get their bladder stretched where they actually put in an infusion of a certain chemical and they get the bladder stretched and the bladder gets a little bit bigger and holds more. That's the other issue that you would look at.
Well, to be honest, Doctor, the reason I called is because this is not, I mean, obviously it sounds very disruptive, but to be perfectly honest, I've you know, come to terms with it, and it really doesn't bother me.
You don't need
lot.
It, then you don't need it to do anything. There's nothing wrong with what you have.
Yeah, but you miss parts of the movie.
I get caught up when I get back. But what I was worried about is that it might be indicative. I guess I had heard about the prostate, the enlarged prostate. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't indicative of something else.
A 25-year-old, who's had this for a number of years, this is not due to enlarged prostate. Now, I could be wrong. I was wrong about 2 years ago.
No, it's longer than that.
Yeah, maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't think this is from your prostate, and adjusting to it is ultimately the way to go. But just to go back for a second, you may want to try these medicines because you may have a situation where you don't want to be bothered by it, and you might not have side effects.
Okay.
In other words, and you might go to your doc and say, look, I want to have some samples of this. And you might not have side effects. And a good example is when you're going on a car trip or you're on an airplane or you just don't want to be bothered. You would like to know about that. But no, chances of it being a large prostate, very slim at your age. And the fact is, we wouldn't do anything about it. I mean, there's another drug you can use for an enlarged prostate. Again, it's a different drug called an alpha blocker. But
Or instead of the drugs and instead of going to movies, you could do DVDs.
DVDs at home, or you could just take up books. Yeah. You could just take up reading and forget about movies.
Yeah, those are options.
Car trips, stay around the house. Yeah, Tom's got it right. So good luck to you.
Thanks, Dr. Zorba.
Thanks a lot for the call. Zorba, remember a few weeks ago we talked about chewing cloves as a tip to stop chewing your fingernails?
That's right.
Neither of us seemed too hot on that note.
No, we weren't hot on it. Not at all.
In fact, you said that when you think of cloves, you think of...
I think of ham.
Ham.
That's right. Whenever ham,
that's right. Well, here comes Mark from Spokane, Washington. Mm-hmm. He wrote in to tell us a little bit more about the power of cloves.
Okay.
He says that he used to chew cloves on a regular basis as a young man.
Oh, gosh.
Really?
That's about as strange as you can get. I wonder if he chewed star anise along with cloves.
Mark writes...
Or nutmeg.
Mark writes, chewing on cloves, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Can help settle an upset stomach, can help to cancel halitosis.
Wow, yeah, because you smell cloves.
May alleviate pain of toothaches
sores. Mouth sores and toothaches.
And in my opinion, actually this is in Mark's opinion.
I've got to get some of this box of cloves.
In Mark's opinion, tastes good. And lasts longer than most bubble gums.
Gum. I was going to say, it must be gum.
He also adds this little note to you, Zorba.
Yeah, yeah.
I must say,
stop.
I must say that no one could mistake me for a ham.
Why is that, Tom?
Hams, he says, can be cured. We always like to hear from you. Send your comments, questions, and tips to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, thank you very much.
A pleasure to be here, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at www.zorbapastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and is produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Joe Hartke is our sound engineer. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us about a week from now here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0127Z. To buy Zorba's book, The Longevity Code, your personal prescription for a longer, sweeter life, or to pick up a copy of Zorba's Heart Healthy Cookbook, just go to our website at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.